Good to be able to be here this morning. We're thankful for the presence of all. We have some special guests with us, and we're certainly thankful for that. Great to see Brian and Jennifer back in our midst and to be able to share with them again. That's always a joy, and thankful the Lord has brought them safely our way. And it's not that I would want to slight them in any fashion, but they're not my favorite guests this morning. We were surprised in a very special way as Jonathan and Kara and Carter and Ava came into town, and we are certainly blessed to be able to have them worshiping with us as well. Always great to be able to spend any time that you can with family, and the Lord has blessed us with a wonderful family, and allowing us to spend this time together is such a great thing, and we are thankful indeed for that. Anybody else is visiting with us, we really are equally thankful that you are here as well. There's obviously a personal note in which we appreciate certain ones because they are our son and daughter-in-law and our grandchildren, but we're thankful that everybody's here. And if you're visiting with us, we hope that you can come back at some other time. We intend to meet again this evening at 5 p.m. and on Wednesday evening, if the Lord permits us to, at 7 p.m. and would love to have you back at that time as well. We're going to be presenting a lesson this morning. This is kind of a follow-up to the lesson that we did last Sunday. We last Sunday kind of took a message up to a point because we were getting ready to start our vacation Bible school. And our vacation Bible school was all about the land of Egypt, and in particular, the servant of God, Joseph, as he was in the land of Egypt. But we kind of did a first half lesson last Sunday because our vacation Bible school started with Joseph in prison. And we know that's not where his life started, and that's not where the biblical account of Joseph started. So we wanted to make sure our kids have an understanding of the character of Joseph up to that point so that they'd be able to follow that lesson a little bit better. And then this morning we've got a lesson that is entitled No Ordinary Joe, and talk about Joseph from that point forward. What things can we learn from Joseph? As we look at the life of Joseph, I just want us to see three things this morning that make this man nothing short of an incredible servant of God. Great things that we can gain by reflecting on the life of Joseph and then thinking about how we make application of those things to our own life. We mentioned last week that there were three biblical characters, great leaders of God, that were placed into public service and all achieved the highest point in that public service for whatever regime they happened to be serving under. There was Nehemiah and Daniel and Joseph. And as we think about Nehemiah, and he was a great leader for God and was able to not only rebuild the wall around the city of Jerusalem so that the people of God felt great protection, he was able to rebuild the community of God. And that was a great tribute to this man, Nehemiah, and his faith and his trust in God to bring him through those things. And then Daniel, you think about Daniel and the great faithfulness that he showed and his ability to serve and to serve so ably under four successive kings. Daniel serving under Nebuchadnezzar and Belshazzar and Darius and then Cyrus after that. And you see all throughout the life of Daniel, and I may have said David, but all through the life of Daniel, you see this incredible service to God from the time that he was a young man and taken into captivity right up to the time when you see him in that lion's den. Sometimes when we see him graphically displayed that way, he's still a young man, but he wasn't. He had spent years in captivity, may have been as old as 70 or 80 years old when that particular confrontation happened. And so you've got this incredible life of faith of Daniel. And then we had Joseph, and that's who we studied in our vacation Bible class or the vacation Bible school. And all through those days, going through the chapters of 37 through 50 of the book of Genesis, this long record. And if you'll open up your Bibles to Genesis, we're going to start there because we see, in fact, that we pick up Joseph way back at the time that he was about 17 years old is when the story really starts to take shape. Joseph, along with his brothers, being sons of Jacob, and we find in Genesis chapter 37, that Joseph went out into the fields where the flocks were and where his brothers were, and it tells us that he was 17 years old in chapter 37 in verse 2, and he brought back a bad report of his brothers. They weren't doing what they were supposed to be doing. It doesn't really tell us what they were doing, but he brought back a report to his father and said, these guys aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, and his brothers already didn't like him. We talked about that. He had this coat that was made for him of all these beautiful colors. And why? Because we're told that very clearly was he his father's favorite. You know, we joke about things like that sometimes and talk about a favorite of our parents. I know we tease my mother regularly about which one of us was her favorite, and others tease her about even her grandchildren and which one of them is her favorite, but Mom always denies that. She says, I love everybody equally. I always loved everybody equally, but that wasn't the case with Jacob. Jacob clearly had a favorite. He loved Joseph more than he did the other sons. He loved him. He was his child of old age, and he had this special affection toward him and really appreciated him and gave him this wonderful gift of this coat of many colors. And so, as you might expect, the older brothers didn't really appreciate that too much. And so they didn't like him. And then you remember, Joseph was a dreamer. You know, and sometimes we don't like dreamers anyway, but Joseph wasn't just any ordinary dreamer. Joseph said, man, I had some great dreams, guys. Let me tell you about my dreams. I dreamt that you are going to someday bow down before me because I will have the rule over you. Now, he described it to him in a different way, and he talked about, in fact, his sheaves of wheat and their sheaves of wheat bowing down to his, and then even talked about the sun and the moon and the stars bowing down to his, and even that his parents and his father would be one who would bow down and serve him. Well, you can imagine. Just imagine you're one of the older brothers, and your younger brother comes and says, had this great dream. You're going to get down on your knees and serve me someday. Well, you're not going to like that too much, and they didn't like that too much either. And so on one occasion, as they saw him coming, they had already made up a big plan. They had decided, that's it, we're done with Joseph. They decided they were going to kill him. That's how badly they hated their brother. They were going to kill him. And Reuben pleads on his behalf so that they don't do that, and they end up instead casting him into a pit, and then they sell him from that pit into slavery, and he goes down into slavery in Egypt, and things just happen dramatically in the life of Joseph. And that's what we studied about in our VBS. And we want to just talk about three lessons that we can learn from Joseph. And I think that says four, but it should be three. Originally, it was a four-point. It's been changed to a three-point, but I forgot to change the title on that page. So it's three lessons that we're going to learn from Joseph. And I, lest you think that means that it got shorter because we changed to three, not necessarily. We just combined the last 2 points instead of taking it as 4 points. Want us to learn some things from Joseph. One, Joseph was a man of integrity. He was a man of great integrity, and we see that in the life of Joseph. In chapter 39, you know, as we picked up on the history of Joseph, Joseph goes down into the land, and he goes down as a slave, but he starts doing very well as a slave. And we talked about that in the VBS each day. I would ask the kids, what kind of slave was Joseph? They would all respond, he was a good slave. You know, what kind of brother was Joseph? He was a good brother. What kind of servant was he? He was a good servant. He was a good prisoner. It didn't matter what Joseph was doing. Joseph was Joseph. And what you saw was the true Joseph. There wasn't any putting on. He was, in fact, a man of integrity. In chapter 39, we find out just how strong that is. In chapter 39, starting in verse 6, talking about Potiphar, whose house Joseph is serving in, it says, thus he left all that he had in Joseph's hand. In other words, he gave him everything, put him in absolute trust. You know, this wasn't a delegating of authority to wherein he said, I want you to report back to me every 30 minutes. Let me know how it's going. He just said, you know what, Joseph? It's yours. I trust you absolutely with all that I have. And so he just put it into Joseph's hand and putting him in that place. And it made him overseer of his house and all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was on all that he had, it says in verse 5. And then he left it all in Joseph's hand. And it came to pass in verse 7, after these things, that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph and said, lie with me. So now here you've got Joseph. He's been put in charge. He could do pretty much whatever he wanted to. For the most part, we understand that would be the case because he was in charge. Second only to Potiphar as far as his household. And then Potiphar's wife came to him and said, I find you very attractive. I would like you, in fact, to come be with me. And she was obviously talking about in a manner that wasn't acceptable in the eyes of God. And that's exactly what Joseph understood. Joseph said, I can't do this. I can't do it. And why can't you do this, Joseph? And we know he was very handsome. That's why she probably approached him. But he says in verse 8, look, my master does not know what is with me in the house. That's an interesting statement. That's the way it's phrased in the New King James. But that's just saying he's not checking on me at all. He's put me in total charge. I can do whatever I want. He says the master, he's not checking on me that way. He's committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in the house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? He said, I can't do this. He's a man of integrity. He maintained purity in his life. I don't know if you saw the movie Fireproof or not. We used that in one of our marriage weekends that we did, one of the marriage seminars. And I remember one scene in there, because if you watch that movie at all, the man in the movie, played by Kirk Cameron, he has a problem with purity in that movie. And it's causing a great strife in the relationship of that husband and wife. And in fact, he's involved in impurity as it's associated with the internet in particular. That happens to be what he's struggling with and dealing with in that movie. But I don't know if you saw that, if you saw it and if you remember or not, they're having a discussion about that. And they're having more of an argument than they are a discussion about it. But here was what she said to him, and it was such a solid point that she made. She said, that's who you are, talking about his impurity, no matter what he wanted to claim to be. She said, that's who you are because that's what you default to. And that's a way to understand that. What are you when nobody's looking, she was saying. In other words, that's what you default to. When I'm out of the house and nobody's looking over your shoulder or nobody knows what's going on, that's the test of integrity. The test of integrity is not whether or not I do something when everybody's got their eyes on me. The real test of integrity on any of us is when nobody's got their eyes on you. And that's what Joseph is saying. All the servants had left the house that day. We're told there weren't any of the servants around. And she made this pass, and she continued to make that pass. It says day after day, continually. And Joseph said, I can't do that because that is not who I am. He was a man of integrity and purity. He maintained honesty, and that showed his integrity. If you look over in chapter 40, because Joseph refused Potiphar's wife, we know things didn't work out so well for him. You know, sometimes there's the tendency to think, if you stand up for God, all things work well. Well, they'll eventually work well. God promises we can have the home in heaven. But here, not always so. How'd it work out for Joseph? You know, it's like you look at some of your biblical people you could call as witnesses to serving God. How'd that work for you, Joseph? Standing up and being a man of integrity and purity, how'd that work? Joseph would say, I got thrown in prison because she told a lie about me. She claimed it was me, not her, that was making the advances, and so I ended up in prison. How'd it work out for you in prison? Well, that's where we're going to next. Now we find him in prison. And so you imagine Joseph in prison, and all of a sudden he's in prison and he starts to make progress again. Why? Because he's a good prisoner and God was with him. It continues to tell us that in the passage. And so he's a man of purity. He's a man of honesty. We know because as he starts to be put in charge of prisoners in the prison, two in particular are sent to him. The butcher or the cupbearer, as some say, to the king, and the baker for the king. And the two of them have dreams, and they're disturbed by those dreams. But we remember that Joseph was not only a dreamer, he was an interpreter of dreams. And so they come to Joseph and talk to him about the dreams, and Joseph's going to give them some answers. And the cupbearer said, I saw these three branches, and then there was a cup, and I squeezed the grapes from the branches into the cup, and in fact they were drinking out of the cup. And Joseph said, you know what? In 3 days, In 3 days, you're going to be restored to your position as cupbearer for the king. And Joseph said, I want you to do me a favor. Don't forget about me when you go. Remember that I'm the one that helped you here. Well, that's an easy thing to do. Somebody comes to you and they've got something that they want you to explain, and you explain a wonderful thing to them. Joseph said, you're going to be out of prison in 3 days. But then the baker came and said, and I had a dream. Three baskets on my head, and there was the bread in the baskets, and the birds were eating from the baskets. And Joseph said, wow, you're not going to like this one, Mr. Baker. In 3 days, Pharaoh's going to lift off your head, and the birds are going to feed on your flesh. I'm telling you, telling the dream to the cupbearer would be an easy thing. But Joseph told what God said. You remember there were other men who claimed to be prophets and who tried to prophesy for God who didn't do that, whose prophecy could be bought, who would say things according to what people wanted to hear. That's exactly what we're told even in the New Testament. There will be those who are supposed to be preaching the Word of God who will just say what you want to hear, and you can pretty much do whatever you want to do. And we know that we live in a society that way religiously. Some people put no restrictions on anybody at all, but God said, you can't do that. It says what it says. And Joseph said, you're not going to like this dream, but this is what the dream means. He was a man of purity. He was a man of honesty. He was a man of integrity. What Joseph was what Joseph always was. And that is a man, in fact, of integrity. Secondly, Joseph was a man of forgiveness, and not just a little forgiveness, but Joseph was a man of a lot of forgiveness. I want you to think about in chapter 45. It was interesting, as we went through the VBS each day, we talked about, wonder if Joseph will ever see his brothers again. I mean, they sold him into slavery. They live hundreds of miles away in the land of Canaan. He hasn't been back there for years. As a matter of fact, we're going to find out in this particular passage that as he's dealing with his brothers and talking to his brothers, it's going to tell us that Joseph is somewhere in the neighborhood of about 30 years old now. So some 13 years from that initial confrontation we find. That's where he is now. And so imagine 12 or 13 years later, your brothers who wanted to take your life, but finally had enough mercy at the pleading of one to at least save your life. And so they did the kind thing of only selling you into slavery. Now, I want you to just imagine that. So all the time that Joseph spent in slavery in Egypt, he spent there because his brothers did that to him. And then Joseph progresses as that slave in Potiphar's house. And she lies about him, and Joseph gets thrown in prison. And why is Joseph in prison? Because his brothers sold him into slavery. But then he thinks maybe he has a chance of getting out of prison, and he tells about the dreams of the cupbearer and of the baker, and those dreams come to pass exactly as Joseph said, and the cupbearer did what? The cupbearer forgot all about Joseph. So imagine the next 2 years. It said 2 more years was Joseph in prison. 2 more years. Imagine day after day after day that you are just sitting there with not much else to do but think, what are you thinking? Wonder if I ever will see my brothers again. If I ever see my brothers again, what will I do? Well, don't we learn a great lesson from Joseph? Because Joseph does see his brothers again. And they have some interesting exchanges in the beginning. His brothers come to get grain because Joseph now has prospered and has come up with a great plan because he interpreted Pharaoh's dream. And he helped all the Egyptians and really is going to be the savior not only of the Egyptians, but of many more than the Egyptians. Because he encourages Pharaoh to make sure that somebody sets aside grain, and Pharaoh puts Joseph in charge of that. And they set aside grain because there was going to be 7 good strong years followed by 7 bad years, 7 years of famine. There's no food, there's no water. And so they'd stored all this grain, and they were prepared for that great famine. And that famine reached well beyond Egypt, and it reached into Canaan, and Joseph's brothers had to come down and appear before the seat of Joseph, bowing down before Joseph, even as Joseph had dreamed would happen. And so they're going to come down to get grain. And when they come down, it's an interesting exchange because he watches them get the grain, and then but he accuses them of being spies. And he accuses them of being spies for reasons. He didn't think they were spies. He knew they were his brothers. Wasn't it interesting when he brought them and sat them down in front of them that he sat them, and they were just amazed because he sat them down in order of birth. He knew they were his brothers. They didn't know he was, in fact, Joseph, but he knew about them. And he accused them of being spies, and they said they weren't spies. And Joseph said, is this all of you? And that was the whole point of that, wasn't it? Because they had left little Benjamin behind. And so he said, prove you're not spies. Go back and get your younger brother and bring him. And he kept Simeon in prison until they would bring him back. So there's that whole exchange, and they were nervous. They were afraid. Reuben was even pleading his case. Didn't I tell you guys? Didn't I tell you this kind of thing was going to happen if we did this? Oh, they understood they had done a terrible thing. But look at Joseph in chapter 45, because they come back the second time and they've got Benjamin with them. And Joseph could not restrain himself before all those who stood by him, and he cried out, make everyone go out. So no one stood with him while Joseph made himself known to his brothers. Now, he told them, I'm Joseph. And they thought, whew, that was a close call. They were still afraid. But look what Joseph says to him. Please come near me in verse 4. So they came near, and he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. But now do not therefore be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years the famine has been in the land, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. And God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. Joseph says, guys, this is behind us. Why? Why is that? What made Joseph the forgiving man that he was? One, Joseph had to turn away from his brothers on one occasion because he felt compassion. He felt saddened. And I would tell you that we understand that we'll see even in the second point, that forgiveness is an act of will. And Joseph acted willfully in the sense of he determined to grant that forgiveness to his brothers, as that is the nature of forgiveness. But forgiveness is not without compassion. It's not like when you're sitting your sons on the couch and saying, hey, guys, you need to sit there with your arms around each other until you like each other, which I wasn't sure would ever happen, and maybe on occasion didn't. Or making one son say to the other son, I'm sorry. You know, very seldom was it that one of our sons would fall down on his knees weeping and say, I am so sorry that I treated you that way. It was an awful thing for me to do. Is that the way yours reacted? Now, mine would normally say, I'm sorry. Well, I don't know that they meant it. I don't think that a lot of times they did mean it. It isn't just an act of saying something or even an act of just doing something. It clearly is driven by the compassion and the need of that person to have the forgiveness as well. And so when Jesus went out, over and over again, as he looked out at the people, it says he felt compassion for them. He knew they needed forgiveness. And Joseph knew. There's no way that God was going to be benefited if he held a grudge against his brothers over this. And that seems to be the whole point. He understands that this isn't about Joseph. It's about God. And if we want to be the kind of people that God intends for us to be, we'll not only be people of great integrity and true people, pure people, honest people, but we'll be forgiving people. So much so that God says, you need to understand, your entire basis of your relationship with Him is based on how forgiving you are. That's tough. That's tough. When you read Jesus' prayer in Matthew chapter 6, and you start reading and think about Him saying, Father, forgive me even as, just the same way I forgive those who sin against me. Forgive me the same way. Same measure, same frequency, same intensity, the same way. I'm just asking you, God, I only want you to forgive me like I forgive them. See, Joseph was a man of forgiveness because that is the character of God. And it's the basis of our relationship. Wouldn't you like to be a more forgiving person? Wouldn't you want to always be an incredibly forgiving person like Joseph was, like God is? That's a dangerous question to answer, because what does that take? What does it take for me to become a more forgiving person? I'm going to have to put that into practice. And so sometimes there are things that happen in our lives that we need to give forgiveness for, because it helps us grow. In our marriage seminars, one of the points we make and one of the lessons is we learn lessons about God through marriage. That's the whole point, I think, of Ephesians chapter 5. It's a relationship between Christ and His church, but He uses marriage as a picture. But we always ask the question in those marriage seminars, did you ever, when you got married, did you ever think, one of the reasons I want to get married is because I will become a more forgiving person? Because I know my spouse is going to hurt me, and that's going to help me grow. What a great side of marriage. But it is. We have to become more forgiving. Joseph was a forgiving person because he was compassionate and he was determined to do what God said. And Joseph was a man of trust, absolute faithfulness before God. Think of all the ups and downs in Joseph's life. Do you ever think, when you read through some of these characters, when would you have quit? Or when might you have quit? Or when would others have quit? When they threw you into the pit and sold you into slavery, you know, some people would have said, you know what, that's it. There's no way this would be happening to me if God was the God that He claims that He is. You ever heard anybody say that? That's a claim made by many. There's no way this would happen if God was the loving, compassionate God that He claims that He is. Or maybe when you got down there and things started to look up again, you would have thought, you know what, maybe God is on my side and things are going well and I'm chief in Potiphar's household. And then his wife tells that ugly lie about you and puts you in prison because of that. And you think, where's this God now? There's no way. I didn't do anything wrong. I stood up for what was right and I'm in prison. Where's this God now? But he was a man that trusted God throughout all of those things. And once the cupbearer left prison and you sat there for 2 years, wouldn't there be a tendency to say, now where's God? Here I am working for Him again in this new role, and where is He now? Joseph trusted. He knew that God was with him. Through all of those things, he understood that it was God that was with him and it was God that was doing. When the baker and the cupbearer came to him and said, in fact, we've got these dreams, can you interpret these dreams? What did Joseph say? Joseph said, I cannot. It is God who interprets dreams. He hadn't lost his faith. The song that we just sang a moment ago that says sometimes we get discouraged and we think our work is in vain. You ever wonder, couldn't Joseph have felt those things? Getting discouraged in prison, but he understood, as that song said, when I get discouraged that way, I know the Spirit of God is still with me and gives me that strength and gives me that encouragement. And so he did that. Think of Joseph by way of those 13 years that he's now spent in Egypt. When you look a little bit further down, you look in chapter 41, when he's there, you find out that Joseph, in fact, has been made not only chief of the land, but he's been given a brand new name. Zaphnath-Paneah. And he wasn't only given a new name, he was given a wife. He was given a wife, Asenath, and he was provided this wife. And she was from a priestly family, her father being the priest of On. And so she comes from this Egyptian religious background, not a Hebrew religious background, not following the one true God that Joseph was following. You ever think, how easy would it have been for Joseph to have been assimilated into Egyptian life? He didn't get a choice in that wife. That wife was given to him. He didn't get a choice to say no. He's now married into the Egyptian priestly family. How easy would it have been over those years to just be assimilated into Egyptian life, and now he's got a new Egyptian name, and just to virtually become an Egyptian? It's easy sometimes to just get swallowed up in the life, but Joseph never did that. Joseph kept his faith in God. And I want you to think about the greatness of Joseph, because our final point, I want you to think about this. With Joseph, what was it that made Joseph the man of trust and faith that he was. Do you ever think about that? I mean, Joseph, how easy would it be to say Joseph was this man of great faith, because even when he was thrown into slavery, he stood by God. That'd be true, wouldn't it? Or Joseph was this man of great faith because he not only interpreted the dreams, but he gave God the credit for the interpretation of the dreams. Or Joseph was this man of great faith and trust in God because he withstood the temptations of Potiphar's wife and went to prison instead of giving in to sexual impurity. Great man of faith, wasn't he? Or Joseph was a man of faith because he stood by even while he was in prison and even those extra 2 years and continued to serve God and do what it was that he needed to do. What a great man of faith. I want you to turn to Hebrews. I think this is a rather incredible statement made about Joseph. Hebrews chapter 11. You got this chapter that we sometimes talk about like it's the hall of faith and all the great faithful things that these people did. And here's what God recorded for us by the writer of Hebrews. This man of incredible faith, what's he point you to? By faith, in verse 22. By faith, Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the departure of the children of Israel and gave instructions concerning his bones. Now, I want you to just think about that. Because if you go back to Genesis chapter 50, it gives you the account of that. But it says, this man who did so much in his life, what do I want to point you toward? God said, Egypt was not where his people were going to live. Canaan was. God said it was going to take a long time, and Joseph was the beginning of that, and they were going to serve down there for 400 years, four generations. But God said Canaan was the land that was promised to his people, and they were coming back to Canaan. And so Joseph said, don't leave my bones in Egypt because we belong in Canaan. Isn't that a great thing to say? I mean, you read that passage and you think, that doesn't seem like any wonderful issue of faith. But look at that. The one thing God pulled out in Joseph's life to record for us in Hebrews when he's talking about faith was exactly that. He said Joseph was a man of faith because he said, this isn't my home. This is not where I belong. And that's what makes us people of faith today. God said, this isn't your home. This isn't my home. We've got a home. A heavenly home that we're headed towards someday. So much so that Paul told the brethren in Philippi, he said, your citizenship isn't here, brethren. Your citizenship is in heaven. That's where we're going. When we have the faith that Joseph had, it's us standing up and saying, don't leave me here because this is not my home. I'm going back to heaven. If you've never made that commitment before, we hope you'll do so today. If you don't know what that means or how to do that, talk to us. We'd love to sit down, show you from God's Word exactly what it is that He asks of you. If we can help you respond to that call, let us know while we stand and while we sing.